Hey there, this is Seth Wires from Channel 9 coming to you from beautiful Studio D, which is not a studio, but it's an actual building here at Microsoft. I'm here with a special guest. We're talking all about Windows Subsystem for Linux. Why don't you tell us who you are and what you do, bud?
Hey, Seth. My name is Sunil, and I'm a developer in the Windows Subsystem for Linux team.
We've done a couple of videos on the Windows Subsystem for Linux.
Right.
So why don't you do like maybe a thumbnail overview of what this is?
That sounds good. All right. So I'm going to draw a few boxes here just to see how the flow goes. So the first thing that the user interacts with today is the bash.exe.
Right.
From there, that talks to something called as the LXSS manager, which is essentially a service.
Yeah.
So let's draw the user mode, kernel mode boundary. Everything on the top is user mode. Everything on the bottom is kernel mode.
Got it.
This goes and talks to our driver, which is the lxcore.sys.
Okay.
The lxcore.sys sees the request from the service. It launches something called an LX instance. Or I should say it creates an LX instance.
Okay.
Which is essentially something like a container of processes.
Got it. So it's like a corral for all the Linux processes that you may or may not fire up.
Right.
Okay.
Which includes the file system and the processes.
Okay.
Everything. And then it goes and launches. The first process is the init. The init forks itself, and then it launches. The child becomes the bash.
So effectively, all through here, there's all this machinery that is in Windows that is just used to actually run this, which if you're a Linux person, you know this is the process that's going to run.
That's right.
Excellent. So we've talked a little bit about sort of the file system. We've talked about sort of the fork system calls, and there's a number of others that we'll put in the description below the video. What are we going to talk about specifically now?
So today, we're going to focus on how networking works within Windows Subsystem for Linux. That's primarily our focus today.
Okay. So why don't you set up sort of why it's a huge problem and why we didn't have it before?
What do you mean, why didn't we have it?
So is networking a new thing? Is it something that was just added? Is it something that's always been there? Tell me about that.
So networking has always been part of the Windows Subsystem for Linux since its first release.
Oh, I see. We just haven't talked about it yet.
Yes. It's a critical piece because everything that we do today, the developers who are interacting with the bash environment, they want to get stuff from the internet.
I see.
So everything that, every packages that you download, Ruby, Rails, Apache web servers, everything comes through the internet.
And that makes sense because I've been doing wget calls, which obviously is calling it. So this has been in there since the beginning.
That's right. That's right.
And why is it, is the networking a lot different in the Linux versus the Windows space? Is that, what's the difference?
So The networking on the Linux side, we're going to come into how that's achieved. But the networking is done to reach the internet.
Mm-hmm.
But networking is also, it's important to note that networking is also used to communicate between different processes.
Oh, I see. OK.
So that's encapsulated in the API set, which is called the Berkeley sockets,
okay,
which most of us have done a course during our time in school.
Sure.
The WinSock layer, which is also the Windows implementation of sockets in the user space, looks very similar to the Berkeley sockets.
I see.
But it's not exactly the same.
Okay.
The challenge is all of the networking is implemented for the Linux subsystem in the kernel.
Okay. Is it in lxcore.sys or in like the full Windows kernel?
No, it is part of the lxcore.sys.
I see. And does this, when, so I'm understanding, like, when I create a socket, I make a brand new socket, and I'm doing it in Linux, it's creating a Berkeley socket, but it has nothing to do with WinSock.
That's correct. It has nothing to do, the redirection does not happen to the user space. All the redirection happens in the kernel, in the driver, in our driver.
And so then the driver has to somehow take that Berkeley socket and has to convert it into a system call that Windows understands.
That's
Is that
correct.
Right?
That's correct.
So let's talk about that.
So whenever you create a socket, the call comes in here, and there is an API surface that the NT provides, which is called the Windows Kernel Sockets.
Got it.
which is way different than, it's a publicly documented API, mm-hmm. which is known as, more properly known as the WSK.
Okay.
And so our driver essentially talks to the WSK and uses that to provide all the implementation that is necessary to satisfy the Berkeley sockets.
And now, is there, like, I'm trying to understand the sort of the intersection in sort of the implementation
yes.
for Berkeley sockets versus the Windows socket. Is there a good intersection, or is there stuff in Berkeley sockets which is not in Win sockets that could cause some issues?
Yeah, so as I was saying, the API set that's exposed by the Windows kernel sockets is way different than the one that is needed by the Berkeley sockets. So most of the functionality is present, but the bridge needs to be addressed by providing the compatibility. So we will go into the details of that, but I think we should take a step back and talk about how networking is laid out.
Oh, let's
do
that.
That's an important piece.
Let's do that.
Okay. So the very first thing when you launch Bash is we come here to and talk to the LXS manager. What it does is it goes ahead and let's put this box and let's call this the NT. So it makes some system calls and it does essentially three things. One, it gets the list of network interfaces. So like if you have a Wi-Fi, if you have an Ethernet, it gets the list, all of that list. The second thing that it does, it gets the list of the DNS servers from Windows.
Okay.
So should we talk about what DNS?
Yeah. The DNS is what translates the domain name into an IP address.
Essentially, yes. So if you're saying www.google.com, it's understood by us. It's human understandable, but machines don't understand it that way.
Right.
Under the hood, essentially an IP address.
Okay.
So somebody needs to do that mapping. And the domain name server is what does that mapping.
Is there a reason why we're using the DNS here and there's not some, like for example, let's just say you're pointed to some DNS router. Why wouldn't it take the list from the router as opposed to local? It's just faster?
No, so the thing is, the Linux, the DNS server is configured and presented to the Linux processes through a file.
I see.
Which is in etcresult.com.
I see, and so that's just a Linux thing that's in there.
Yeah, so it is. It contains a list of DNS name servers.
Got it.
So somehow we need to populate that list so that the Linux processes are aware of the DNS servers they need to contact.
So that's just a Linux. Linux expects this to be there.
Correct.
And we got to find a way to get that information over there when it does everything.
That's correct. So okay. It's kind of synchronizing the information, getting it from NT and populating it to the right place.
And I think it's important to recognize, and this is the part that's sort of been blowing my mind, is that we're not taking C code and compiling it special for the LX instance. It's literally the ELF binaries for Linux.
That's
right?
Correct.
And so those ELF binaries for Linux have certain instructions that are going to expect this to be there.
Correct. So the processes, they open these files up. They expect some entries to be present in there. So the format has to be the same. These are not recompiled binaries, so everything has to work as they expect it to work.
That's amazing. And that's why you bring this over so that exists?
Yes.
Okay.
We try to keep it as seamless as possible. So, and the third thing that it does is it registers with NT for notifications. So let's talk a little bit about what these notifications are.
Okay.
So if you take your laptop and move from, say, a Wi-Fi to an Ethernet adapter, your IP address might change.
Yeah.
You might get a new interface. All that needs to be kept up to date over here.
And is that being put into a file, or is there a running process that has all that in there?
So there is. So what the session manager does is it registers with NT and says anytime anything get updated, either you have a new interface, your interface Ethernet interface changes, or you have any change to the DNS, call me back. And let me know there's a change so that I can take necessary actions.
And what actions? Let's just go through the process of, like, because our computers will always optimize to use a wired connection.
Mm-hmm.
So let's just say I plug it in.
Mm-hmm.
Now all of a sudden the NIC card is available. I'm on a different subnet than the Wi-Fi perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
What's going to happen?
So if you have a new interface that comes in, the NT is going to call back the service and tell, here's the updated information.
And who is it giving that information to?
The LX manager, the NT calls back, and LX manager, the service, gets that information. So what the session manager does is it calls into a driver and says, here is the updated information of all the new interfaces you have. So every time a Linux process then tries to query all these interfaces, we have the updated list over here.
So if I'm running an ifconfig and then the stuff comes out and then I plug in my NIC card and do an ifconfig, you'll just see everything updated.
You should, but unfortunately ifconfig does not work today.
Oh, I see.
But theoretically, when we plumb that in, everything should work.
I see. And so you're getting the bottom stuff in there.
Correct. All that information is maintained here. That's the list of network interfaces.
Okay.
When we get an updated DNS entry, what the service does is it updates the resolve.conf with the updated information so that these can stay up to date. We know that our audiences in GitHub are facing some issues with DNS because the DNS entry is not getting updated, but that's just a bug.
I see. And so that's something that should just happen.
It should theoretically just all happen, and we're going to look into it.
Okay. So let's move on to the sort of the more specific.
Right.
I'm in C. I'm making a new socket, and I'm putting an internet address. Tell me what system calls you had to implement and what that process looks like in Linux and how you implement it.
That's a good transition. So once we have, I'm going to wipe some of these out. Once the environment is set up, all the communication happens through sockets.
Right.
Every time you go to an apt-get, a socket is opened, and we will go through what the API set looks like.
Right.
So I'm going to wipe out a little bit of this. The very first thing that an app wants to talk is it opens a socket. So it happens through a socket call.
Okay.
The most important thing that it specifies in a socket call is the domain name. And then the type of the socket, and there is a protocol.
And then sometimes the port and stuff.
Yeah, that's going to come in the, correct, but that's going to come in the bind call.
Oh, I see. These are system calls.
Yes.
Okay.
These are the BSD socket system calls of the API. The domain, I think it's important to note, the most used domains that we find is the INET domain, which is the internet domain. So anytime you want to reach the internet, you open an AF INET socket.
Okay.
The other most important domain that we have found being used by the apps is the Unix domain. Now, this is interesting. As we were talking earlier, sockets are not only used to reach the internet, but they're also a means of inter-process communication.
Sure.
So anytime I want to keep the communication local to the same machine, I don't want to talk to anybody outside, AF Unix sockets are used.
Okay.
We open AF Unix sockets, the other side has a socket, we can then send, receive information.
And that's for like inter-process communication.
That's correct.
Within your local machine.
That's correct.
Okay.
So let's move on to the API set because we're going to come back to this later. So the next thing that happens is once you have a socket, you essentially bind the socket, which essentially gives the socket a name that the other people can use to identify that socket and communicate to it. So in case of an INET socket, you usually specify an IP address and a port. So I would say bind to 127.0.0.1, which is also localhost, or I can say 0.0.0.0, which is anybody can see that.
Okay.
And I would say, okay, bind to port 8080. So that's the second thing. Once that bind happens, it's visible to other people.
Okay.
Then once the bind happens, so now there are two, let's go talk a little bit about the type of the socket. You can have two different types of socket, or you can have more than that, but the most commonly ones are the, on an INET domain, is the UDP socket and the TCP sockets. It's common knowledge that UDP sockets are connectionless sockets, and TCP sockets are connection-oriented sockets. So the type is UDP or TCP, or which are essentially SOC datagram or SOC underscore stream.
Got it.
So that's the protocol. Yeah. So in a UDP socket, there is no connection between you and me.
You're just sort of sending out.
It's like a mail post.
It's like my jokes right now. They're just going out there.
Yes.
And I don't know if you're laughing, and you're never going to tell me.
And you don't even know if it's listening to your jokes or not. So you just put it in the, put the address in there, you put it in the mailbox, it will reach
there.
Hope
it lands.
Hope it lands.
Got it.
the TCP is a communication. So I say, are you ready to accept my my connection?
I'm ready to accept your joke.
Yes.
I say, yes, I'm
so
ready.
So it is an
joke.
Exclusive relationship.
Got it. And then you say, here's my joke. And I say, I got your joke. And you say, did you get it? And I say, yes,
yes.
I did.
Yes, so it's like a communication. Now, once we establish that connection, the communication can happen.
Got it.
So on case of a TCP, let's see the UDP case, which is much more simple. So we have a bind. Then you can just say send to. And then you say, this is the data that I want to send. And this is the destination IP address. And this is the destination port. So if you are, say, suppose listening on 127, this on port, you have a UDP socket open and this bind to this. I come, I bind to 8080, and then I say, send this data to this. That's how I send data to you.
Got it.
So to send data, that's the API that's used. If you're on the receiving side, you call receive, and then you provide the socket that you have, and the data that comes in can be retrieved from that.
And this is all, like, I remember doing this stuff in C code.
Yes.
And opening two process windows.
Right.
And then sending a lot, and then the other one never did it, and then I had to go ask the dude, and then she came, my TA came, and she said, Seth, you forgot to do the receive on this
side. Right.
So it all has to happen like that.
It has to. There is a certain pattern in which you have to make these calls for this to happen.
Got it.
In the case of TCP, the only thing that happens here extra is you connect. So you connect to the remote port.
Got it.
And then the remote, on the remote side, you have to accept that connection. So if you want to send something to me, you say, I want to connect to you. If I'm here on the other side, I say, I accept your connection.
So I'm going to tell you a joke, and you're like, yes, tell me.
That's right.
Like, okay, here's my joke. And then you're like, okay, I got it.
Yeah, so like a three-way handshake.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like a handshake. So once you have accepted the connection, then you can send me data. I can receive data on the other side.
So are these all directly bound to system calls? Are these, like, is this a system call? This is a system call. This is a system call. And you just sort of had to implement those things?
Right. So these are essentially APIs, and there are different implementations of these APIs.
I see.
The Linux implementation of these APIs is a one-to-one mapping of a system call. So whenever you call a socket, there is an equivalent system call for a socket. Whenever you call a bind, there is an equivalent bind. But this specification is for the API set.
And that's nice because this is the specification, right? You just need to make sure to implement these things with these headers, and then the implementation details is really left up to us.
That's correct. And they only specify the semantics. That implementation can vary as long as you maintain that semantics. So that's really neat because then we can come in. We know what the specification looks like. We can provide an alternate implementation for it, as long as we meet the specification.
And luckily, since the binding of the system call to the API is one-to-one, all you have to do is implement these things in here so that whenever you see that particular system call, you just sort of need to redo the registers or repoint to a different IP pointer.
Yes. So let's talk about how we do some of that mapping, because I think that's the important piece.
Let's do it.
So once we... let's talk about the WSK a little bit. We touched on it a little bit earlier, but I want to focus a little bit about what WSK provides. So WSK is the kernel interface for network programming.
Got it.
By the NT. It's a publicly documented interface, and it's a very low-level API. It sits on top of the TCP IP driver of NT.
Okay.
So it provides an API set. As we said, that API set looks very different from the Berkeley sockets.
Sure.
And that's where the challenge is in mapping those. But it allows you to say, it has some very similar constructs. It has sockets. You can open a WSK socket. But since it's a kernel mode component, the way it works is it works on IRPs, so IO request packets.
Okay.
So you say, you create a socket, you say whenever there is, and there is an event-based mechanism. So you say, whenever there is data on this socket, call me back.
Okay.
So it's very different from what we have kind of gone through
this
here.
This feels more like a push, and this is more of like it notifies back.
Yeah, it also has a kind of a synchronous model, but it's also an asynchronous model because it needs to be fast.
I see.
And you don't need to waste resources just waiting on information.
So effectively, you're like driving a car, a really fast car here, and here you're driving a really fast motorcycle, and somehow you need to make the car instructions work on the motorcycle.
Something like that.
Okay.
So let's see how these individual call maps into it.
Okay, let's do it.
So when you call a BSD socket, whenever app, say an apt-get, which is very commonly used to get packages.
I know, I do all the time.
Yes. So it's going to open a socket, right? And then that socket call comes in us. What we do is we open WSK socket. There's not much magic going on right now. The bind comes in, we bind the WSK socket.
Okay.
Nothing more. But at the time of the bind, what we do is we tell the WSK, okay, here is the socket, here is the port. Anytime you get data on it, here is the routine. Call this routine when there is data.
Okay.
So now let's talk about the UDP case,
okay,
which is simple.
Which is simpler, yeah.
Yes. So when you call a send, we come in here. What we do is we know what the socket is corresponding to that handle. We have a handle.
Uh-huh.
We get that. We marshal the data, because the WSK expects the data to be
in a certain order.
Yeah. It has to be non-page memory, because the WSK can run at a very hierarchical, so you have to lock that page into memory. So there are certain things that happen behind the screen.
And here, it may page fault when it's sending a datagram, and that's okay, but we can't do it here.
Yeah, we can't do it here. Okay. So when you send an information, you send, this is the memory location, send this memory location, these many bytes from this memory location out.
And it has to be contiguous kind of thing.
Yes. So what we do here is we lock that into memory. We create an IRP, which is an IO request packet. We call into the WSK, say, here is the information that you send it out. So the WSK will do the job. It will talk to the TCP IO driver and do that job for us.
I see.
Now, the interesting part comes on the receive side. So when you call receive, you just expect any information that's available on that socket to get back that information.
Uh-huh.
But how do we do that on the LX core side? What we do is we talked about this routine that we register.
Uh-huh.
So whenever there is information available for that socket, WSK calls us back. So what we do is the internal structure that is mapped to this socket, we have a buffer.
Okay.
Now, what that buffer does is whenever this routine is called, it gets that data from the TCP/IP driver, it starts filling up this buffer. And this is all asynchronous.
Uh-huh.
The user mode app has nothing to do with this.
Right.
This is all happening in the background. So this buffer gets filled. Now, when you call receive, when the app calls receive, we look if there's data in this buffer. Whatever appropriate information is necessary or the app has requested, we start pushing that back to the app.
So I have a lot of questions.
Sure. All right, we can slow down a little bit.
So here's the first one, which is going to seem innocuous at first. But let's just say, because it's on the same machine, you can't occupy a socket and a port at the same time from two different processes. It might throw an error. How do you handle that? Like, let's just say I created a socket here,
mm-hmm.
a WSK socket,
mm-hmm.
in some C++ program on Windows,
mm-hmm.
and I open port 80.
Mm-hmm.
And then I go in here and I do this.
Mm-hmm.
Do things explode? Am I going to get hurt?
Yeah, so since this is not a virtualized environment, I mean, this is not a VM.
No, it's not.
It's running on the host.
Uh-huh.
The view of the socket of the network currently is the same between the bash environment and any process that runs on the NT,
so
even 32.
So it has to throw an error, right?
Yes. So if there's a conflict and you already have a socket that's bound to a port and a Linux process comes in and tries to open it, we will say the address is already in use.
Good. So, and that would be in addition to the ports that are open, sockets that are open on Windows.
That's correct.
So they are all brothers and sisters and they can't fight with each other in the socket. You mm-hmm. either have a chair or you don't.
Yes.
Okay. The second question, and this is a little more subtle, is when I'm doing UDP packets, your buffer might fill up with any number of things.
That's correct.
Are you telling it this came from this sender on this port, and then it knows when it says receive, it knows that it's actually getting it from the right spot?
Great question. Okay. So the right API that the UDP uses is the receive from.
Right.
And in the receive from, every time we get an information, we also know who's the sender of that information. So we store that over here, like a metadata or something.
Got it. So each little set of bytes that you have in there will say, this is coming from, correct, this packet is coming from this address, this port.
Correct.
Got it.
And UDP is a packet-based protocol.
Right.
So it's not a stream.
Right.
So you get the whole packet back.
Okay.
So whenever you talk, you say, I want, say, 20 bytes, and the packet is 10 bytes, you only get the first packet.
Got it. And so the way this is stored in bytes, is this stored in bytes or packets?
So we have two levels of information. This is the buffer which stores the data.
Okay.
And we have something, it's actually a linked list, which stores how many bytes is the first packet of. So this is one big view, but the metadata tells us this is how long the first packet is for.
I see.
The second item in the link tells that this is how long the second packet is for. So you have some metadata that tells you more information about that individual
packet.
So
you might have stuff in your buffer that somebody never calls a receive for that's just going to linger.
It's going to linger. It's going to stay.
Until the processes.
They just expect the information to come whenever they call the receive.
Got it.
The UDP, the other thing about UDP to note is it's not a reliable protocol. So you cannot expect the information to be present. It's a loss-based protocol.
Sure.
So if there's a loss, there's a loss. And there's no way to know that the loss happened.
It's like my jokes. So that was one of them. All right. So let's move on to TCP, unless there's anything else we want to do with UDP.
I think that's a good overview of UDP. TCP, it's much more involved.
Yeah, I mean, there's like handshakes and stuff.
There's a lot of information. That is a lot of things that are going on in the back.
Right.
So as we talked about, whenever you want to create a TCP connection, you call connect.
Mm-hmm.
So whenever the connect happens, it comes to WSK. What we do is we make that equivalent call on the WSK and says, connect, go connect to this socket. That's not where the magic happens, mm-hmm, again. So on the receiving side or on the server side, there is usually a socket, and there's an API which says, listen on this socket. So I'm ready to listen. So the server calls listen. In that case, what we do is the same thing when we create call socket, we create a WSK socket. The same concept, when the bind happens, we bind the WSK socket.
Okay.
When it calls listen, we tell the WSK, okay, I'm ready to listen. Anytime there is a connection that comes in, call this routine back, which is like accept routine.
Okay.
So whenever you are ready to connect to me, the WSK will call our driver and says, okay, routine, here is the connection that's coming in for you. What do you want to do with it?
And that connection is going to be sort of somebody is asking for something.
Somebody is asking to connect to you.
Okay. Okay, and then what you do is you say, do you want to listen or do you want to reject that connection?
I'm already listening.
Okay.
So it asks me, do you want to accept it or do you want to reject that connection?
Okay.
So what we do is, again, in the WSK socket, in our internal structure, we keep a list of accepted connections.
I see.
So on the server side, if you take a step back and how it happens is you're listening to it. Five people can come and connect to you, and that connections will be accepted, and they will just sit there. When the server calls accept, that's when its connections start getting back to the user, and that's when the connections is ready to for send and then receive.
Okay, so what's happening? Let's see if I get this right, and you correct me or I'm wrong. So you're doing the socket, right? You do the bind, then you do listen.
Yes.
And what's gonna happen is when you do listen, once people start getting incoming requests or connections,
mm-hmm,
you're going to say, hey, this is a connection that wants to do business with you,
mm-hmm,
get packets back and forth. Do you accept it, yes or no? Is this, where do you accept it? Is this this call?
Yeah, so after you listen, the next call the server does is it accepts. And it returns a different socket. And that is a socket that's connected to the client side.
Right.
So you accept on the server socket, it returns you a different socket. These two sockets are connected, and they can send receive information.
I see. And so since it's TCP, what you're doing is you're keeping a list of all of the accepted.
Correct.
And you're also keeping all, because then now it becomes sort of like the UDP process where you're sending and receiving, except now there's more packets. It's saying, yes, I got it, and no, I didn't.
Well, that all happens by the, all that handshake is done by the TCP/IP drivers. We try to minimize all the networking-related logic as least as possible into our driver because that is the domain expertise of the TCP/IP driver.
And so in this connection, let's just say I'm connecting to your server. There's going to be something here that has my IP address and the socket and the ports that we're talking to each other on, and then it's going to fill it with data.
Right. So let's see how it proceeds from here.
Let's do it.
So when this is just a list of accepted connections. So when you call accept, we look if there's a connection accepted. We take this out. We create a new structure in driver. And now these two are connected. This is connected with the client side. Now every time there's a send that happens on the client, there is, say, a hanging buffer, and the data is buffered there.
Got it.
You call another accept. We create another different structure. And then there is a hanging buffer, which has the data.
Got it.
So it's like you create child, and then you say, OK, you take care of the business of talking to the other socket.
And the whole handshake and the packet ordering and all that goodness is happening here at the WSK. And then you're just getting all the data that you need and whatever.
That's correct. But all that handshake, just to correct you there a bit, all that information happened. WSK is just like a wrapper to talk to the driver.
Well, this is awesome stuff. Is there anything we're missing?
We have been working with the TCP/IP owners of the Windows networking side, and they are really helping us drive a lot of these scenarios. So I just wanted to give a shout out to them. They helped us deliver scenarios like non-admin pings. Earlier pings, you know, ping is like, oh, I want to ping this array. So pings are restricted to admins because of some security restrictions. And they help us light those scenarios up. And there were other problems with IPv6. And there are a lot of socket options that are available on the BSD sockets but are not implemented in the NT side. So they are also helping us fill that gap by providing implementations for those.
That's pretty amazing.
Yeah. The other neat part of that working with that team is now all of these options are also available on the WinSock side, on the user mode.
Oh, my goodness.
So if you want to port an app, from here to here, it's going to get easier.
Not only that, but you could watch them work in two different command windows on the same machine and not in a VM.
That's right.
Which is pretty amazing. Well, where can people go to find out more about this?
So we're going to have a blog post around all of this soon, and hopefully we will capture a lot of this information. We didn't talk a lot more about the Unix sockets because it's, again, a whole big thing in itself. But hopefully we will capture all of that information in the blog post.
And I assume it's going to be similar to this, but with just different data structures.
Well, the big difference there is that there's no WSK involved.
Right.
Everything has happened local, so all that information is kept within the driver.
Which is super nice because you're not bothering the TCP/IP.
Yeah, there's no need to bother the TCP/IP because it's all local within the system.
Fantastic. Well, this has been amazing. We've been learning all about networking in the Windows subsystem for Linux. Obviously, a lot of engineering. Learned a lot myself. Thanks so much for watching. My name is Seth Juarez.
Thank you.
We'll see you next time. Take care.